The BS Report is presented by Subway. Football season is over. Footlong season is just beginning. For a limited time, get any piled high regular footlong for just $5. Any footlong, just $5. Hurry in, Subway. Eat fresh. Eat fresh. The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound. Like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
All right, very special guest on the BS Report. He's in the studio. Well, this actually isn't a studio, but it's my office from Saturday Night Live, Bill Hader.
Hey, what's up, man?
One of my favorites.
Oh, thank you.
We kind of were doing an impromptu podcast in my kitchen.
I know, we were. I hope we didn't
leave it on the table.
Oh, no, man. We could. I'm really good at repeating information.
Oh, good. So you were on Leno last night and now here. I'd say this is the biggest 12 hours of your career.
This is the biggest 12 hours of my career. Going like, hey, how are you going to do Bill Simmons?
What's that? Had you done Tonight Show before?
Yeah, that was my second time doing it. And it's so interesting because Jay Leno is kind of the only guy who kind of comes in beforehand, who kind of comes into your dressing room beforehand and says, you know, oh, are you excited? What are you going to talk about? From Tulsa, Oklahoma. That's cool. And he's really nice and he tells you stories and it kind of relaxes you. Conan kind of does that. If he sees you in the hall, he'll kind of stop in and go, how we doing? You know, whatever.
Letterman, no.
Letterman, the only time you see him is when you do your interview.
Mm.
And that's always, you know, and Letterman's stage is like freezing cold.
Yeah, I've always heard that. Is that like some sort of way to intimidate the guests or like what's
I don't know,
the mindset?
Maybe like relaxes people. If they're hot, they get irritated. I don't know what it is, but it is freezing.
I heard somebody told me that he had a theory that if the audience is warm, they get sleepy. But if they're cold, they're on the edge of their seat.
That might totally be it because it does do something to you when you go out there and it's cold because you're just real like, you know, you move around a lot. It's like you don't want to sit still.
You
kind of like want to get like some energy going.
Well, maybe the way to do it is you get dressed up for the appearance like you're going to a Jets game. In
November, right.
Wear the parka.
Yeah. Now the NFL guy VO over my segment.
So you have basically 2 weeks off right now.
Yeah.
And you're involved with the South Park guys.
Yeah.
So how does that work? So you're doing SNL. Then you come out here.
Then I come out here and I kind of hang out with those guys because their run is only goes for like 6 weeks and then they're kind of off. So I kind of they do these retreats. That's how it kind of started. It started with me and Matt Stone becoming friends. Like I met Matt and then we became friends and then I met Trey through him and we just kind of hung out just as you know buddies.
Right.
And then he said, "Yeah, we're gonna go do this retreat in Seattle." Like last August, you should come and like just hang out with us. And
what do you just spitballing ideas?
Yeah, you just kind of like, you know, it's really cool. Trey has a really, you know, nice apartment there and you go and it's, you know, it was me and Erica Rivanoia and, Vernon Chapman and Kyle McCullough. Those are like the kind of stock people that they've had forever. And you just kind of sit around and, you know, it was like, well, you know, we have this idea. Would it be funny if this happened? Like, what about this? You know, and you kind of, and it's really like Trey kind of working, you know, keeping you on target and Trey paces around us and then we just kind of throw out ideas. Like, could be this or could be that.
So but, is somebody writing them down? Like, how does that?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes Trey will go over to a laptop. Sometimes he doesn't. And you kind of, and then it's funny because then later in another retreat, we'll go, well, remember we had the idea. It was like, oh, right. Yeah, that idea. You know what I mean? And everybody gets really excited. but it's just funny to see him, you know, how those guys work. I mean, it really is like.
Well, the pace that they actually do when they're cranking out the shows because people don't realize they're doing them like you know 2 weeks before basically
or like
and
a week
going
before
up, or even 6 days sometimes
like,
so they're up they're basically 7 day work weeks for what is it like 6-7 straight weeks
they just like they have Wednesday off like the day that the show airs they're all sleeping all day because they basically from Thursday to Tuesday and on Tuesday they do an all-nighter into Wednesday morning. and then go home and sleep. It's kind of like the SNL schedule.
I was going to say, yeah. How do you end up with these two shows that have like crazy schedules?
Well, as a writer's thing, it's not too bad on South Park. And again, I can't emphasize enough, Susan Hurwitz is also works at South Park. Those are kind of like their writers, you know? Yeah. I'm kind of like, me and Vernon Chapman kind of come back and forth, but I'm not like, I'm more like their friend that, you know, we laugh a lot, and I think, right. You know, it's just kind of like, it is nice to have someone in the room that's laughing at the ideas and is kind of like chilling out.
So
and I'll
Ed
throw
McMahon.
Stuff out. I'm Ed McMahon. I'm the Ed McMahon of the South Park room. I did, every once in a while, I'll see some of the episodes and I'll go, oh yeah, that was kind of my idea, kind of. You know what I mean? They made it funnier, you know? They made it funnier. That was kind of my thing or whatever.
But the SNL template, and I talked with Seth Meyers about this. The template was created in the mid-70s when everybody was doing cocaine.
Coke, yeah,
and
everybody
all that
was on
stuff.
Coke, yeah.
But now, 30 years later, it's still there.
Yeah.
And these, I mean, for instance, you guys are up basically till, what is it, 4:30 in the last three nights?
Well, basically what happens is that, you know, you could start, I figured it out after my second season, because my first two seasons I did the, like, stay till Tuesday until 7, 8 in the morning, then go home, and then you come back. You have to be back by 2 in the afternoon to do the table read, where you read through, like, 40, 50 sketches.
Yeah.
And I would just be wrecked after that. I didn't know my name after that. I'd just be like, whoa. So I after a while, was just like, I can't do this. And there's one writer, Emily Spivey, who's fantastic. She's been writing on the show forever, and we were going to write something, and she said, you know, Bill, just come in early and we'll write this and just jam, you know, just get it done. And then, cause I like to get out of here by like 1 or 2.
Mm.
And I was like, you could do that. And so then I just started doing that. I was like, oh, well, I'm just going to do that. I'll get in at 3 and you know, meet in a weird way. It kind of like helped it, you know, me like organize my writing night. Cause a lot of times I would just show up on Tuesday at 6 p.m. and go, oh, what am I going to do this week, you know?
And you thought, like, they had security cameras saying, hater didn't leave till 7.
Yeah.
Give him a check mark.
Right. Well, there's that Larry David story, you know, when he would write, he would come in during the day, and, like, he wrote, like, 2 sketches and tried to leave at 8 p.m., and Dick Ebersol, who was running the show at the time, was like, where are you going?
Yeah.
You know?
There's like, more to do.
Yeah, you got to, like, hang out all night. And as a cast member, sometimes you do feel like you need to hang out later because, you know, someone will come to you at 5 in the morning and say, hey, man, can you do Alan Alda? You know? and you go, let me try it, and I'll get back to you in a little bit. And I go, how about this? You know, you come in later, and they go, yeah, all right, maybe not.
You
know?
Do you find that creativity, though, that when you're kind of half asleep, sometimes you come up
punchy.
With some weird stuff?
Yeah, sometimes you get really, really punchy, and it's like Will Forte. That guy, I don't think, starts writing until 5 in the morning. And then,
really?
And when I come in at 2:30 to start the table read, I've gone home, I've slept like at least 4 hours, I've showered.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can get a chance to go down to the gym and ride the bike or whatever, you know what I mean? You kind of feel like, oh, I feel good. Okay, good. Let's start this table read. Because the table read on its own, even if you have, it is exhausting.
How intimidating was that the first time you did it?
I was freaked out. I didn't sleep the night before. I mean, it didn't matter.
Seriously?
I could, like, my first table read, my first show, I couldn't sleep. I just asked my wife. I was just pacing around everywhere. I was like, oh, man. Oh.
What about the first time you pitched stuff?
First thing I pitched.
Nerve-wracking too.
Oh, yeah. It's terrifying. There's certain people that I think are just really calm and cool, and they're just like, oh, yeah. I'm not, I get real nervous. My first thing I pitched was to Steve Carell, and I pitched a Bobby Flay idea because I used to work on Iron Chef.
Oh.
So I said, oh, maybe you could play Bobby Flay and you get like electrocuted during the Iron Chef thing. And there's like a titter of laughter. And like, I set it like down to the carpet and I was like, I don't know. Maybe you could like,
I don't think people realize when you have that many people in a room. You would think it's like everybody's like just laughing. Oh, my God. But actually, it's like impossible to make people laugh.
Oh, yeah. It just depends. Sometimes, like, beginning of this season, we had like this crazy run where we did like 10 shows in 8 weeks. And,
right.
And yeah, the gauntlet. Seth Meyers had t-shirts made up that said the gauntlet, 10 and 8.
I like that.
It was cool.
Yeah.
But we were exhausted, and some of those were great, but the best one was John Hamm hosted.
Yeah.
And we were all like kind of crazy because we've been doing so many shows. So someone, I think this guy Colin Jost maybe and Seth, but Colin Jost, another great writer on the show, had the idea to us all to dress up as Mad Men characters and go into the pitch and do the pitch like in the show.
Right.
And I completely forgot that we were doing this, and I showed up, and I didn't have a suit. And so I kind of had that thing of like, no, I'll just go as myself. Don't worry. But all the guys were in, like, suits.
Wow.
And I'm like, no, just, you know, forget it, you know, whatever. And I was kind of like, yeah, whatever. And then Amy Poehler was like, no, come on. So she made me up as one of the call, like, the secretaries.
Oh, yeah.
Amy Poehler put lipstick, and she found a wig, put a wig on me. So I had boobs and everything, and, like, a pencil in my hair and all that stuff. And then all the girls are just like Kristen Wiig. They're all dressed. Like, it looked pretty cool. Like they went down to costumes and everything. So he was not expecting that. And we all came in and, Simon Rich, one of the writers, I think Simon Rich and Rob Klein did like the thing where, you know, it was like the, you know, the what you call it, the flip chart thing.
Yeah.
So it's like baby. Babies are funny. What's funnier than a baby?
Yeah.
King baby. You play King baby. That's the sketch.
He must have loved that though.
He was so freaked out. He just sat there like, what?
So a writer's coming in your office just constantly saying, can you do this? Can you do Charles Nelson Reilly?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Can you do that? Or can you
do that? A lot of times it's probably guys you've never thought of doing, right?
No, I'm always like, it's weird. I never sit there and go, oh, I'm going to figure out that guy. It's kind of, you know, it's like you listen to somebody and Jim Downey, who's been a writer on the show since the beginning of the show, he talks about impressions of like people having handles. Like that guy's got a good handle. You know what I mean? Like, and like I've been doing this guy on the show, Keith Morrison, the Dateline guy. And, he was a guy that just had a good, you just figure that out. And I just did that subconsciously around the house.
Yeah.
Cause my wife and I would just watch Dateline. You go, and just keep doing that. And, my wife's smarter than me, and she was like, you should do that on SNL.
Right.
And I was like, you think so? Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Some people, a lot of actors now, like, they don't have that. So, like, when someone says, Adam Brody or something like that, we're going to do an OC thing, or, you know, that's not it, but that's just an example.
Yeah.
You're like, well, what do I do? Like, he's just a good actor, just does something. It's so much easier when they have something you could kind of repeat to yourself. Over
The funniest impressions always seem to be, they're not dead on impressions. There's pieces, but you've blown them up.
Yeah.
Like you did James Gum.
Oh yeah.
There's no bigger James Gum wheelhouse than me. I actually was in the theater laughing at James Gum and people were like looking at
what is going on.
So you did like a little,
bad guys, good guys talk show. Yeah. That was Seth Meyers wrote that sketch.
Yeah.
From an ideal from Neil Brennan, who used to, I should give him credit. Neil Brennan, the guy who was co-creator of the Chappelle Show. So you should get bad guys, good guys talk.
So how do you like approach that? So you watch the movie and
you know what that is? That is me and this guy, John Mulaney, we're thinking about doing a James Gum talk show for a while.
Sign me up. I'm in.
Every time we wrote it, it just was so dark and messed up. And we're trying to figure out, and so we keep kind of pitching it to Seth, like, what do you think, Dan? And he would go, just write it and see what happens, you know?
Oh, wait a second. I should say, for the people who don't know, James Gum is the guy from Silence of the Lambs, the
sheer big fat person
does the tuck scene.
The tuck scene.
Pulls his nipples out.
You don't know what pain is.
And somehow became... What's weird is that my buddies and I were making fun of him in the mid-90s before the internet.
Yeah.
So you never realized that other people think this guy was funny. You think like, oh, this is unique to us. We have this guy.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, around the country,
everybody was walking around going,
he's a very big fat person.
what happened was I just did it. And so, yeah, then I showed up for the Bradley Cooper thing and then, that table read. And that's a good example of, you sit down for the table read and you get like your sketch packets and you're kind of going through them. And Seth pats me on the shoulder and goes, hey, I got you in James Gum and something, buddy. And I go, what? He goes, yeah, you're doing James Gum in this. And I go, no way.
You're coming up to the big leagues.
Oh, thanks, man. Like it really was like that. Yeah, knock it out of the park, buddy. See ya. And, that was so much fun to do. And it was funny because the way I did it on air, because there was something funny about playing him kind of relaxed and cool. Like he kind of confidently knows he's way more effed up than anybody out there. You know what I mean? Like, there's nobody more screwed up than me.
Right.
And so he's just kind of chill, like having a good time on this talk show.
Yeah, I appreciate it because the movie came out 18 years ago, so it was like how James Gunn had evolved as a weirdo.
Yeah.
A much better sense of himself.
He's so much cooler now, just knowing like, yeah, I messed up, whatever. He had this weird confidence about him, but yeah, and then I did the line that Seth totally had this thing so I could say, like, what's your ideal mate? That was the question, and Andy Samberg played Hans Gruber, Michaela Watkins played the woman from Fatal Attraction.
Yeah.
And then I played that guy, and it was solely so I could say, I guess a great big fat person. Yeah. And I said it, and one dude right behind went, yes! I heard one dude in the back totally get it. Everybody else was like, oh. He likes fat chicks. Okay.
I loved it. In fact, I demand that James Gunn comes back.
Oh, yeah. We will figure out a way. I would like it if James Gunn became kind of like just this weird non sequitur that I just kept doing in sketches.
Kept showing up.
Like at the end of a doctor's sketch, like, oh, who's your next patient? James Gunn. Hey, what's going on? And just out. Like, that's it. Like, what?
It's like an extra.
Yeah, just a total. We tried to do that with Colonel Sanders. I did Colonel Sanders in a couple of sketches that Colin Jost wrote, and I was like, we had this image of like, oh, we should just have him like in the waiting room in the background. And
right.
Just like, but it never happened.
Well, when you've been doing Vincent Price, mm-hmm. Is that something you were doing like when you were 17?
No. Well, I was a huge fan of those movies when I was like 13, you know, to
right.
17. I watched like all those Roger Corman movies and movies like The Tingler and stuff like that. All that was just fantastic. But that kind of came from me actually doing, there's this guy, Dana Gould, who's really funny. Dana does a really good Vincent Price, and I loved his stand-up routine. He would do Vincent Price. So when I would say, oh, you got to listen to Dana Gould, he does this Vincent Price thing, and then I would do kind of his variation of Vincent Price. And I was telling this to Andy Samberg when we were actually flying back. After we found out we got the job, we both flew back to L.A. to kind of like get our stuff.
You got the job same time?
We got the job. Yeah, we got hired about the same time. And we got flown, you get flown out to New York to kind of have a dinner with Lauren saying, hey, congratulations, you got the job. And then we flew back to LA and it's kind of like, pack your stuff, you got to be back here in like 4 days, you know, however long it was. So I just, you know, we're flying back and I was just kind of doing this Vincent Price thing. And then I started doing Vincent Price rapping and I was just kind of kept doing this voice. And he was like, oh, you should do that on the show. And then just the impression just got better. I kind of just made it my own. Like, I actually watched some of the movies and just started making it my own. And then this guy, Matt Murray, and I wrote the first one. And I remember, I don't think Lauren, I don't know if he liked it. He was definitely kind of like, okay, this is interesting. And my favorite thing he said was that I didn't really know where he stood on it the whole first week. The first one we did was a Thanksgiving Day special.
Yeah.
And I had no idea how he felt about it. And then, you know, during the air show, Lauren kind of stands in front of the stage, kind of watching you and kind of like so the audience can see him. And he kind of like is watching what you're doing and kind of give you a quick note beforehand, like, hey, like speed it up or hey, slow it down. Don't worry, like this, whatever. And so he walked up to me, I thought to say, we're losing time. So like speed it up or whatever. And he turned to me and goes, I like this sketch, but why now? And he walked away. And then it was like, go! And so I'm like, ladies and gentlemen. And if you watch it, I trip over my first line because I'm going, what does that mean? What the hell does that mean? What does that mean? Why now?
Why in 2009? Or
why in 2007 are we doing Vincent Price sketches? And I was like,
I mean, I thought that was kind of the point of the sketch.
Yeah,
this is so dated. That's kind of what makes it funny.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I'll tell you what about those Vincent Price sketches. The thing I like about them the most is that, I mean, growing up, obviously, I was like an insane SNL fan.
Right.
But I also loved SCTV as well. And they remind me of SCTV in a way. Like when I watch them, it's kind of like a thing that's like me and Fred and Kristen, like we and whoever the host is, like we just find this really funny and we get it and we're having a fun time. That's what I loved about SCTV is a lot of times I wouldn't know what they were referencing or what's going on, but I would laugh because they're just so committed and into it. And there was, you know what I mean? Like I felt like,
totally.
Oh, I'm on the outside looking in and I want to be on the inside. Like I want to know what's going on here, you know?
I don't think people do that enough.
Yeah.
I think creatively everybody's trying to figure out you know, what would the focus groups think, or what, and nobody ever just says like, hey, these four people think this is funny, so let's trust them.
Let's just do this. Like, why not? I mean, that's why I like the UK comedy a lot. Like, we watch a lot of those shows because it is so kind of, you know, on the inside, you know what I mean?
Well, we talked about Hot Rod before.
Oh, yeah.
And I told you, I saw Hot Rod in the theater just because Sandberg makes me laugh and had people in it like you that I like. And my wife went and we were like, yeah, it was all right. And then it's on cable and now I kind of get it.
Yeah, it's a movie like
It's kind of a parody of 80s movies, very secretly, and there's stuff in there. And I kind of missed it the first time.
Yeah.
Because I was watching it just because I'm watching a movie. I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But now it's grown on me. Now it's like, if it's on, I end up watching it.
Oh, to me, Hot Rod is the movie that, like, and Akiva Schaffer, and we talked about that, he directed it. We talked about this all the time. Is like, it's the kind of movie, like, when we were growing up, that would be on HBO at 2 o'clock on a Saturday.
Yep.
Like an 80s movie, and you just sit there and watch it with your buddies, or like you go out, you know.
Right.
You go have like a little league game and then come back and watch.
And it's on again, even though it was on yesterday.
And
at
you'd
the same
watch
time.
It over and over. Yep. Like Just One of the Guys was one of those movies. You could see that movie 100 times.
Totally.
And you would see like
Secret Admirers like that too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You just see that movie. Oh, you would just see those movies over and over and over. Like those 80, Rad was kind of the movie that we
see,
really
see. Now you're in my wheelhouse again. Yeah. James Gunn was in there. Now it's like even further.
Rad is like, if you watch Rad, like the t-shirts we're wearing in Hot Rod, those are the same logos and everything as Rad went. Like
we had the Footloose homage too.
Yeah, got the Footloose homage,
which had a little. It had like a twist of American Anthem in it.
Yeah,
it just did, randomly
with him doing. It did have the American Anthem thing of him doing gymnastics in the woods.
Yeah,
which.
I have a whole thing about rewatchable movies.
Yeah.
And I think Hot Rod, never expected this, but it's strangely rewatchable.
Totally.
You pick up little stuff in there.
And people more and more, it's now like their kind of comedy trump card, you know, in a way with me, where people come up and go, hey, I like Hot Rod, man. And you go,
and I just
cool.
did that to you. I didn't mean to do that.
No, but like, I'd say younger people, like, to be like, just so you know, like, I'm a comedy fan. Like, I own Hot Rod. Because people will say they like Superbad, and then they go, oh, cool. But, like, a lot of people like Superbad or, like the Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
It's like music.
Movies.
It's like you say you like Superbad or Knocked Up. Yeah. You're not – what are you saying?
A lot of people like those movies.
You have something in common with 10 million people.
But, like – and those movies, I love as well. They're fantastic. Mm. But, like, Hot Rod now is in that niche group thing where it's like, I got it.
It's kind of cool to like it.
Yeah, it's kind of cool to like it. And you get – that was cool. I did the Tonight Show yesterday. You know, you do your break after Jay, you know, before the music comes on, and you're just kind of sitting there, and you kind of chat with Jay, and you're sitting there, and a lot of people start yelling out Hot Rod.
Right.
And I texted Andy, like, people were yelling at Hot Rod.
You know, I think the first Wayne's World should have been like that.
Yeah.
But instead became too popular. But if you...
Yeah,
it's a
sequel,
really
yeah.
dated movie now. It actually is like almost too dated. But when you watch it, it has these stuff in there that would have been much funnier if the movie wasn't popular.
Yeah.
You just would have appreciated it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was watching Wayne's World the other day on television, and I thought it was still... It was funny. Like, I was laughing, but there was, like the...
There's some pandering.
The new print. What is that? The remember, it's like, little, yellow. Remember that? Like,
yeah, yeah.
And I go, and I was like, what is that? Oh, yeah, that commercial. You know what I mean? And you go, oh, yeah, that thing.
It's very... the first Austin Powers and the second one, too, is like this, too, where it's got pop culture stuff in there.
Yeah.
That they put in there, but they didn't realize it would have a shelf life. And then 5 years later, you're like, what the hell did that mean?
Well, yeah, what was that? The Hot Rod has none of that. Hot Rod is like, so like grilled cheese fighting a, yeah.
But the most famous role you had is Superbad. I mean, that's what you get most associated with, I guess, right?
Yeah, that or lately I get, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, people will say something about that.
Is that more popular thing?
No, not as more. I mean, they're equal. I mean, I don't know. I guess I should say, like, Officer Slater and Superbad is the more kind of, like, people go, like, crazier about. You know what I
mean?
Like,
if you're walking on the street, but, hey, Officer Slater!
Or, like, you know, oh, no, the cops. I get that a lot.
Where's McLovin?
I should have guessed that. Where's McLovin?
Where's McLovin is like,
so original.
Yeah, like people yelling that from like a guy. You know, people come in like going, "Oh my God, no way! All right, where's McLovin? Oh my God!" Oh, but you know, that's the funny thing is you do that movie and you don't you know, that it's like everything else. It was just like we were having fun doing it, and you felt like it was under the radar. And
so which mafia do you believe? Are you in the Apatow mafia, or are you in, like, the Lonely Island mafia? Or do
I'm
you just
both.
You're in the
I'm
South Park? You're in a lot of mafias.
Yeah. I've been, yeah.
A lot of packs.
Ben Stiller, yeah, all those things, yeah. That's the other one, Tropic Thunder. A lot of people say, hey, Nutless Monkey, because Tom
Cruise
me a Nutless Monkey at the end of that movie.
But at some point, do you get your own movie?
Yeah, well, I wrote something for Judd hired me and Simon Rich to write a movie, a slasher movie.
Really?
Yeah, he wanted to write. He was like, yeah, you should be in a slasher movie.
Like a funny slasher movie?
Yeah, but not like scary movie. Like, what would you really do if that happened? You know what I mean? Like, you would run and be scared. You wouldn't stay and, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it was kind of more like there was something there that Simon and I talked about of, like, guys, you know, you watch shows like Dateline, the Keith Morrison stuff, where you play super violent video games, or people are going to see movies like Saw and
grizzly movies.
Yeah, the movies that I'm not really into, and it wouldn't be like that. It's like people are into that stuff. It's like, what would you do if that thing was coming to your house? You know, you would freak out.
Interesting.
You know what I mean? So it's more like that idea.
Yeah.
So that's happening. Who knows if it'll ever get made, but we turned in a draft of that. And then, like other little things, just like, you know, coming up.
You have a new movie coming out, which I didn't realize when we booked
yeah.
this. So we just did it because you were in town and
yeah.
it made the most sense. But so Adventureland with the guy who directed Superbad.
Yeah,
right?
Greg Mottola.
Right.
Greg, he's the best. I'm actually hopefully going to be in his next movie, which is called Paul, with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, the Shaun of the Dead guys and those guys.
So this one is set in the 80s, 1987.
It's 1987 in an amusement park in Pittsburgh. And it's very, like, close to him, you know, like, it's kind of Greg's personal story of, like,
a coming of age.
It's a coming of age story. But whereas one dude on Ain't It Cool News kind of made, this guy Quint said it made a good correlation between, like, where, like, Superbad is like 16 Candles. Adventureland is like Pretty in Pink or something. Do you know what I mean? It's more of like, it's funny. It's got that stuff, but it's more of like a drama, it's just a different flavor, which I think is good. You don't want to, like, just keep doing – you don't want to do the same thing.
I watched the trailer last night, and I thought it looked good. It was obviously going to be my wheelhouse because it's set in 1987.
It's 87.
Where my brain is set.
yeah. Like, 87 was when – 87 was a big year for me because I remember I snuck into RoboCop.
Ooh.
And totally – that was, like, the first really violent movie. Like when Ed 209 goes crazy.
87 was also kind of the year that the 80s went a little bit haywire.
Yeah, totally.
It went haywire musically. It went haywire from a movie standpoint, from a TV standpoint. Like, the stuff that had been kind of cool. Like, I think Miami Vice is a nice way of measuring
what happened in the
80s. By 88, Miami Vice, it's just the wheels have come off. You know, like, what
happened?
Crockett's got long hair. He's fat. Tubbs is wearing weird suits.
Yeah, totally. You're just like, what? They just like, we have to make it bigger. Make them bigger. Make Crockett and Tubbs literally bigger.
But it was still like not totally, I mean, there was no sense of self-awareness or irony still, which is what made it kind of fun. But
yeah, I mean, that's why people, if you watch when people do make fun of the 80s, a lot of times they are kind of going after that era sometimes. You know what I mean? Because the other stuff is kind of cool. The early 80s, I mean, I still watch that style, the fashion or whatever. I'm like, oh, that looks cool. You know, but then when you get like, late 80s, it's like, what are you guys doing? I don't get any of this stuff.
And then there's movies that were made like in that 89 and 92 range that were trying to be 80s movies.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't know that they weren't
made
in 1985, but like Adventures in Babysitting. Or would, not
yeah,
a,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
a,
yeah.
what was the Applegate one? Don't Tell Mom,
Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
That movie should have been made in 1985.
Yeah.
But it was like 91.
Yeah. No, without a doubt. Yeah, there were those kind of like... I mean, you still kind of see them now a little bit, but you just get like those high concept ideas that people just kind of, you know, you could say in a sentence, like, don't tell mom the babysitter's dead.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, babysitter dies, what are these kids going to do? Or, you know, and it's like, you get a sense, like, especially executives and stuff, like, they love that when you could tell them and they immediately see the marketing.
Yeah.
They immediately go, oh, Christina Applegate, I totally know how we're going to market this. You know what I mean?
Just one of the guys crossed with Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah, boom.
Got it.
Got it. We're in. Like that movie, The Player, you know, like yeah. That's so true, man. I remember like watching those things and being like, oh, that's got to be a little over the top or whatever. And no, it's not at all. Like you go in those meetings and you're like, huh.
Well, at what point in your career did you realize, oh yeah, I don't have to go to lunch with everybody who says, hey, you want to go to lunch?
No, I'm not.
You're not there yet?
I'm not that point in my career. I really like to hear what people have to say because a lot of times what happens is someone will have something and you go, oh, there's a kernel of something there that's really great. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but a lot of it's smoke blowing though. They just want you to be there and they tell you how great you are for
that's true. But there's that movie Role Models that Paul Rudd and Sean Williams Scott did. And like, you know, that was something I think that, I don't know, someone else had done it or they'd written it or something. And then those guys kind of took it over. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it was like kind of the first time I was like, oh yeah, you could do that. In my head, I was always like, oh no, it's got to be like, you know, you have the kernel of the idea and you just go do it.
Didn't Tina Fey do that with Baby Mama? They kind of took the script and
maybe,
hijacked it a little bit.
Yeah, and kind of go, oh, I see. You're allowed to do that. I think I was always, you know, of the mind of like, nope, it's the written word. Can't mess with that. But I'm super bad. That totally went out the window where it was just like, I was like, can we just improvise? That's the thing Greg Mottola is really good at, and he's really good in Adventureland and Superbad is like, you know, keeping what the writer's intention is, you know what I mean? And keeping what is, you know, I mean, eventually, especially that's his personal story. Like but he wasn't there going, hey, my boss never did that. You know,
he was doing the Cameron Crowe on you.
Yeah. He was kind of, he was like, he would never do that.
You have to live.
You have to do this. You have to do that. It was never that. It was like, it was so like Kristen Wiig and I just were allowed to kind of just have fun. And he would just go, yeah, that's good. Let's do it again. He has more of an approach that I've never worked with this guy, but what I've read of like Mike Nichols in a way where Mike Nichols kind of just stands back and watches what you do as an actor and then kind of come in and go, yeah, let's just do it again. And
well, the Judd Apatow kind of urges people to ad lib a little bit, doesn't he?
He loves improv. I mean, I have one scene I've only been directed by Judd once and Knocked Up. And I had one scene where he is like, where I'm Katherine Heigl's editor. And we did it one way where he was like, yeah, this is what I wrote, but like, let's do it where you kind of don't like her. And Catherine, you guys don't have a good relationship. Hmm. So we'd improvise that scene for a while.
Yeah.
And then he would go, okay, now let's do it where you guys kind of get along pretty well. All right. And so we would do that. Like, we're just mutual friends. We did that version, which I think is the version that ended up in the movie.
Yeah.
And then he'll say, now, Bill, let's do it where, like, you have a full-on crush on her, man. You love her.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so then you kind of do that version of it. So then he gets in the editing room, and he's like, oh, I can take that little moment from the crush moment, and that was funny, so we could put that here. But we have the thread of it is where they're just friends. But then I also like this moment where they hated each other, where she gives him that look, which we never would have gotten in these things. So it's a different way of working where they just shoot a ton of footage.
That's kind of the way it used to work a little bit. Like, I remember Caddyshack. I think they had like half of it.
Oh, yeah.
Probably because they're on
Bill
drugs.
Bill Murray stuff. Yeah, because they're on drugs. Well, I worked with Harold Ramis on Year One. I have a small part in that movie. And that was a thing where he kind of like, you did it as written. And what usually happens is if they let you improvise, it's like you do it as written and they go, all right, guys, we got it as written. So, hey, you guys, if you guys want to ad lib on this take, go right ahead. Cause I'm happy, you know, which usually means we're going to do what we just did, but so you guys
just
feel like
case.
You know, involved, we're going to do this other stuff.
But I remember in Caddyshack, I think the studio gave them a note, hey, Bill Murray and Chevy Chase, we need a scene with them.
Yeah.
And they just kind of were like, hey, what if he's playing night golf? And
they just came up with it on the top.
Yeah,
yeah,
they did
which
it
is
like in 2 hours.
One of the best scenes in the movie.
Yeah.
But it feels like that when you watch the movie from a
structure point.
It makes no sense.
He's like, playing golf at night.
Why am I watching this? But in a way, you're kind of like, I don't care. It's Bill Murray and Chevy Chase.
Right.
And you know the stories, like those guys, you know, they got in a fist fight when they were at SNL and all that stuff. So it's like, it's really cool to watch.
So for you on SNL, you're working, you know, all these guys are still alive except for Belushi and Farley.
Yeah.
They come back from time to time.
Yeah.
Like Dan Aykroyd's been on the show
this year. Dan Aykroyd.
So like some sort of like club chemistry type where they give you advice or tips?
Yeah, totally. That's been the most amazing. My third show, they said, oh, you know, Steve Higgins was like, hey, Bill, come back here and sit down at this table. And I go, okay, yeah, what's up? And then I sit there for a little bit and I'm talking to him, and then Dan Aykroyd comes in and goes, hey man, I want to talk to you. You know, and he was so nice. And he gave me great advice. It's the same advice Amy Poehler said, is like, you know, be a part of an ensemble, you know, like
throw yourself into it.
Just throw yourself into it. If you got to play a waiter, you know, be a good waiter. You know what I mean? Like, because the guy who's the lead in that sketch is going to be a waiter in your sketch later. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to like slough off, like, you know, and that's what I always liked about guys like Dan Aykroyd and Hartman and all those and Bill Murray and all those guys.
I think Sudeikis has turned kind of fit that mold.
Oh yeah,
the last 2 years.
They just whatever
he
does,
play anything. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever he does, he's committed to and he sells it.
Yeah,
you know. And of the new guys, you know, Bobby and Abby and Michaela and Casey are that way too, where it's just like they're so good at kind of, because when you start out, that's kind of the roles you get, you know?
Yeah, it's much more of an ensemble now. Like when the show got derailed a little bit in the 90s, you had a lot of guys who were basically comics or one-note acts.
A lot of stand-ups, yeah.
Who were too cool for school a little bit.
And yeah.
They didn't want to play. They weren't going to sell the waiter.
Well, yeah.
David Spade doesn't want to be a waiter.
He doesn't want to be a waiter.
Be David Spade.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I want to do what I do on stage. Like, the reason you guys hired me.
Yeah.
Because I'm myself, or I have this persona on stage, and I'm funny. But as a lot of people on this show now all come from improv theater or just acting and stuff, or even like the Lonely Island guys, like Andy came from being in those short films with his friends, and he knew you have to share the spotlight, where you have to share the stage with people.
And trust people.
And trust people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And really learn to trust people. And that's the thing I like. I think that's why the show, I think, has been good, is that everybody are truly fans of each other. Like, when anybody's doing anything, I like to be out on the stage and on the floor, the live audience, to watch it is just cool. And, you know, it's like before you were saying, it's kind of like a, you know, it's like a basketball team. And it is like, there is a camaraderie, a sports thing of like, you know, Kenan Thompson will go up and kill in some sketch and then come off and we'll all pat him on the back and go, hey man, good job, man. Good. That was awesome. Oh dude.
You know why it's like that though? Cause you don't keep stats.
No, you don't keep stats.
If they were like, you killed it stats, you'd be like, yeah, that's 13. He killed it stats.
He killed it stats. Well, some people think stats are like going online afterwards and seeing how many people wrote nice things about you and bad things about you.
Don't trust that.
But you don't trust that at all. It's like a 15 year old kid, you know, going like, well, I don't like Bill Hader because. And I did that my first season and stopped immediately because I was like, oh man.
I wanted to ask you about the impressions, because like I was talking, I had dinner with Matt and Trey and a couple other people a few weeks ago, and they were talking about you and how you can be with somebody, you're in a room with somebody, and you just naturally pick up on one thing and start doing the impression of it.
Yeah.
And we mentioned a little earlier about there has to be some sort of hook that you blow up.
Yeah.
So like for somebody like Obama.
Yeah.
Who doesn't really have a, I was watching him last night. He did his press conference.
Yeah.
Tough one. Blank, almost a blank slate. Like, you almost have to play him like the banana in the tailpipe cop from Beverly Hills Cop. It's like, we're not going to fall for the banana on the pail.
Yeah,
like, he's
kind
of got one of those voices. And I don't know how Armisen does him. I really don't.
It's like, you know what it is? Is like, you do find a hook of the thing, which was something that they picked up on was, and you know who did a good Obama was Dwayne Johnson actually did a really good Obama.
But you know why? Because I think that's how Obama should be played.
Yeah.
I think you're doing it like Cyrus, Warriors, The Rock, kind of that. You almost be bombastic, but he's the president and people
He's like, so, basically, like, yeah, it's that, it's the, when they picked up the thing, like, that's what I mean by like a hook. And then you watch, like, I watched the thing last night too, and I noticed it. Where
he
has a verbal pause, and so.
But there's something about his voice.
Pick up on it a little
there's
bit.
Something about his voice that it seems like he's going to get very animated in a second.
Yeah,
that's the other thing. It never happens, but you're kind of like, is he going to do it?
Is he going to get crazy?
Yeah, but he never. He's the president. He can't.
Yeah, he can't. I mean, that's the great thing is, it's like the first time you see, you know George Bush talk, you go, oh, okay, we know how to play this guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or even
he's kind
Biden.
Of easy.
Yeah, or Biden, too. I mean, I think Sudeikis is a great Biden. You know what I mean? Just, and it's not even a voice thing. Because that's the thing with me and someone we haven't brought up yet, which is Daryl Hammond, who's like, you know, the master, you know. And but Daryl, it kind of all starts with voice. It was voice. He sits there and just he tape records people and just listens to the voice. And he has a tape recorder up to his ear, up to the point he goes up on air.
Really?
Just with like John McCain's voice, like doing a press conference. And he just sits there and listens to it. He doesn't practice. Like, I walk around and just say one line over and over again in a voice. You know what I mean?
So you don't lose it in your head before you go out?
Yeah. Like, I did the
Have
guy
Have you ever
from,
lost a voice when you went out?
Yeah, I started out with I did Malkovich on an update, and the first time I spoke, it was off. And in my head, I went, oh no. He was like, hello, Malkovich.
I did notice
like,
that got better as it went
I go,
along.
Hello, Seth. I literally just said it. I was in my own voice. I was like, hello, Seth. And then on my head, I was like, oh, dude, where is it? Where is it? Where is it? You know, and then as I'm talking, suddenly you hit one word and you go, oh, there it is.
Right.
You know, and it's breaking up the word thing where he's like compensated. When I said compensated in my head, I went, oh, good. I got the impression back. Okay, good.
Yeah. But have you ever lost it the whole time?
I don't think so. I had to do Christopher Walken to Christopher Walken, and I got so nervous beforehand, I kind of bailed on the impression a little. Like, I didn't bail on it, but I think I was in my head that I was about to do it to him, so I got really nervous.
Right.
But we all did impressions, but I was the leadoff guy that kind of sets up the game of the scene.
Like, yeah, I love that sketch. That was good.
Yeah, Seth wrote that, but I was like, oh, man. Okay, man, there's a lot of pressure, and I just put way too much pressure on myself. And if you watch, the next sketch I did was Dave Matthews, and I tripped up a line in that because I, in my head, it's like sports. It's like you get rattled. It's like when you watch LeBron or somebody, you know, just going, what is he doing? You know what I mean? It's like, so, you know, it was like,
so you're like a pitcher. You need the pitching coach to come out.
You need someone to come out and say, slow you down. It's the exact same thing where you come out and you go, oh, I messed that up. And then I go out and do Dave Matthews. And I fumble that first line because I'm screwed up about that thing.
But it seems like you can do Pacino falling out of bed.
Yeah, that's pretty easy. The Pacino thing was so funny because I did impressions of friends and stuff like that. I never thought of doing anybody famous until I had to do my SNL audition.
And seriously? Then, and then even as you were doing improv, you never did celebs?
No. Huh. I never did celebrity impressions. I always did weird voices, or I would do
Oh, no, you were that guy, weren't you?
I just did weird voices. I could not come out. I just came out with a weird voice, and everybody go, really, Bill? Come on.
Yeah.
And the Italian guy that I did, Vinny Vedecci, I did that in at Second City LA, and then Animals from the Future, the sketch group that I did. And so that was kind of the only character I had. I remember, because Megan Mullally, she was the one who recommended me to Lauren, and then Naomi Odenkirk, who's my manager, was like, I had a meeting with her before she was my manager, and she was like, well, what do you do? And I go, well, I do this Italian guy, and that's about it. And she was like, well, you got to have three characters and three impressions for the SNL audition. That's what they asked for. So
seriously?
So figure out two more characters and figure out three impressions.
You're like, Jane Gum, done.
Jane Gum, got it. Keith Morrison, everybody knows who that is.
Yeah.
James Mason. But I did. I came back with all these guys who were dead or guys I don't look like or anything. It was just it was weird. But I figured out Al Pacino from watching his acceptance speech for the Emmys. I watched him do an acceptance speech.
For Angels of America?
Yeah. And he just seemed really out of it. And I just started walking around going, oh, wow. I just started kind of doing that around the house. That's kind of how it starts. My wife is really the person you should talk to because she's the one who really sees the birth of these things because she'll hear me in the shower just going, oh, I can't understand. And I'll be just start doing a voice, and then she'll be like, what are you doing? You know? But I do get kind of in a zone or whatever.
The Pacino thing is so good that you guys won't even do it now.
No,
it's one of those things you won't, you try it out once a year. It's like seeing a UFO.
Yeah, it's it was one of those things too that I realized I don't look anything like him. And as much as that shouldn't matter, it does in a weird way because we've tried it before. We've tried it again at Dress. And it doesn't play as well when I move around a lot and stuff like that. That's why if you notice, it's always the first time was just that one shot where I'm lower than Amy. You know what I mean? And it's really quick. And I get out when we did the Katrina thing. And the second time I'm behind that counter.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know what I mean? And it's never a close up. It's always far away. So it's because the closer you get, it does make a difference.
So that's why you can never do my Dancing with the Stars idea.
Yeah, I can't because I'm tall and lanky and he's not. The one that we try to get on and we thought we were going to do it, and I'm kicking myself for not doing it as a digital short, but standards and practices say we couldn't do it.
Coming back, we just realized that Bill couldn't tell that story.
Yeah, I can't tell that story.
For the same reason that NBC standard and practices.
They wouldn't let me tell that story.
But let's just say there's a video on the internet that has a very identifiable name.
And yeah.
You're going to have Al Pacino watch it?
Al Pacino watching that. And the idea was that Gene Hackman sent him that video. And he goes, Gene
and I, we have the same sense of humor. It's going to be funny.
And then watching it and going, what the hell? And him screaming. Then we had another one. This guy, John Glazer, is really funny. He came in and guest wrote, and he wrote a Pacino thing called Al Pacino's, which was like his pant line. And it sounds dumb, but what it was is like, it was a commercial and you would see two guys wearing chinos and then it would whip pan over to Al Pacino looking at them from binoculars and then going, pants! And then it would be like two guys in chinos like golfing and then it would whip pan over to him like in a golf cart with a newspaper and then flipping it down going, pants! And then it'd be like a guy on a date, you know, walking in with chinos and then it would whip pan over and him like tearing the tickets, you know? And he's like, you gotta like the guy with the pants! And then it was like him in like a department store, and it said, it says the Al Pacino's, and he goes, Al Pacino, the only pant made by me. And then he kind of sits there and smiles as the music plays, and then the music slowly fades out, and he looks up at the sign.
Al Pacino. Oh, I get it.
And then you cut out.
See, you guys should have a podcast where you do all the failed pitches that didn't quite make the show, but you just describe them in a minute.
Yeah.
I would die. I would listen to that every week.
Sometimes they don't get on for very good reasons. Yeah. Majority of the time they don't get on for very good reasons. And then sometimes, you know, it's like the host isn't into it, which is that's cool. Like if they're uncomfortable doing something, we don't want to do something they're uncomfortable with. Or it's stuff like we're saying with this website where standards and practices say, guys, we can't let you do that.
And then a lot of times you have an idea that sounds awesome until you actually do it.
Oh, man.
And then it's like, oh, man, that didn't work.
I will say sometimes 80% of the time, if I start writing something, this is just me personally, if I start writing something after 4 a.m. and I'm laughing really hard and I go, this is going to be the funniest thing ever, we read it on Wednesday and it dies. It gets nothing. And
really?
You're just like, man, what was I thinking? This isn't funny at all.
And then you think, oh yeah, because it was 4 a.m.
It was 4 a.m. and I thought, well, Will Forte and I did a sketch that we're very proud of that, you know, the Sarah Palin episode of SNL was the highest watched episode, like, you know, of all time or whatever. Mm. And the sketch I had on that show was something Will and I wrote called Fart Face.
Yep.
With Josh Brolin. And we did it at Dress and it got nothing. We're just businessmen calling each other Fart Face and it becomes very serious and we start yelling at Josh and he cries and then we threaten to tell people that he cried in our office. And then we actually do it. We start calling people at the end of the sketch and we drive him to commit suicide. Will and I thought this was really funny. Again, this is one of those like 4 a.m, like we're laughing so hard. This is so dumb. And then we did it at the table and everybody laughed and we were like, oh, that's good. And then Lauren just really liked it. He was like, no, it's weird. I like it. And
you missed an opportunity to do the Lorne voice there.
Oh,
it was good. Yeah, reminds me of Kids in the Hall, another show I did.
But he liked it, and then so we did it at Dress, and it got nothing. I mean, obviously it played to nothing, like crickets. And so we got done, and I was like, oh, you know, well, we got a chance to do it once. That was cool. And then we came in, and it got moved up. It didn't get cut. It got moved up.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, whoa, how did it get moved up? And Lauren just was like, I really like that you guys really go for it in that thing, and I want to see that on air. I think it's good in this show where everything's political and it's all stuff to have a sketch like that.
That's really like silly sketch.
That's just totally dumb. Like, let's just go for it. And it played at Crickets at Air. And my favorite thing was that before we went out, Josh Brolin, like, looked up at the audience before we went out. And I can't say what he said, but basically he's like, let's shut these people up. It plays like a mammoth play. Like, it really looks like we're doing a drama. It's so funny. And that is like the thing that Will and I, we watched it back and we were laughing so hard because we could tell like the audience is just not into it at all.
They want it to end.
They want it to be over. And we just kept going with it.
When you do the one that the four guys who they sing the song.
Oh, yeah, bar song.
The bar song. How do you have to find out what the rights, what the available rights are before you do the sketch?
No.
Because the last time you used a song that I had literally never heard of ever.
Oh, the Mr. Big song? That was.
I can't remember. Was that the last one?
That was the Bradley Cooper one.
Yeah. I'd never heard that
to
song.
To be with you. That was a hard one because we couldn't even like really sing that at all. It sounded bad.
I think you did American Pie.
Yeah, that was. No,
not American.
We did.
Someone from that genre.
We did. We did.
I can't remember.
I can't remember any of the ones we did. I think we did The Wait by the band.
So you have to find a song that has a chorus that's like...
Those are written by Jason Sudeikis and Brian Tucker. And those guys have to do all the... They have to figure out the song and figure... I just show up on Wednesday and it's like, hey, man, we did a bar song.
Yeah.
We did a bar song. Let's go rehearse it real quick.
Yeah.
And we rehearse those a lot because you got to fit your story. It's got a time out to where right when you're done with your story, you're back into the chorus, you know?
Yeah, it seems I'm fascinated by that one because I could just tell it's a lot more complicated than it seems.
Yeah, we've done it a couple of times. The Paul Rudd one was fun because it was in a car and I got shot a la Pulp Fiction style. That was really funny. But the Bradley Cooper one, my story changed between Dress and Air. Brian Tucker came up to me, the writer, and was like, I hate to do this to you, man, but your joke just didn't work at Dress, so we changed the joke. It's different. So that was like the second time I did it was on air, which
freaked
me out.
So you read the cue cards De Niro style?
Yeah, we always read the cue cards. That's the thing. They want, because if you like look at people, Lauren doesn't like it when you're, and it does look weird like when you're like in a like a profile shot.
Right.
He likes it so people could see your faces. So majority of the time, the way they shoot it and stuff, sometimes you could tell more than others, but we are usually always on cards. People are always looking at cards. Just like you're
so
always
there's no memorization?
Out. Not really. Unless like when I do Vinny Vedecci, the Italian guy, I mean, I'm not, it's cause it's all gibberish. I'm not really looking at cards or anything, but, and the other reason for that is that stuff changes by the minute sometimes at Dress, like on air. Sometimes you'll be like, hey, we're running low, so that beat where you said this thing, that's gone.
Right.
And, you know, you might forget that. You can't, you know what I mean? Like, you know, some people, I heard Molly Shannon would, like, memorize everything. I just, you know, that was another thing you talk about, like Dan Aykroyd, my friend, he said, go
to
cards.
Did he have, like, a photographic?
Dan Aykroyd always went to cards.
He always went to cards.
He's like, I always went to cards.
The photographic memory?
I don't know.
I thought somebody could just...
Might have been Hartman, man. He
somebody
really
had,
good.
Yeah, somebody like didn't need the cards ever.
Dan Aykroyd said he always went to cards. Maya Rudolph also was like, just go to cards. It feels weird at first, but they shoot it in a way where they'll be all right.
Well, fortunately, we didn't do that for this podcast.
I had it all on my shoe.
We should talk. Let's do 2 minutes about sports before we go.
Okay, cool.
Because you're a big Cubs fan.
I like Cubs. Yeah.
Last year didn't work out so well.
No. 100 years, it was all lining up to be very good. Everything was kind of in its place. And then, is that the most errors in the infield? What's the chances of that happening in the Dodgers?
I think it's the most
game?
Errors ever in any sort of organized baseball game.
Ever.
Eight and over.
But that's just like a course.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, being a Red Sox fan, I'm sure. Here's my question. As a Red Sox fan, would you go back to that curse mentality on things, or
no.
Is it kind of like it's broken, it's done, or are you guys just like...
I told you, like, you're going to need some sort of miraculous change of karma. For us,
right.
It was being down 3-0 to the Yankees, coming down to the last three outs of the series, reversing that, and then winning four games in the span of, like, 80 hours.
Yeah.
When you look back, it's like it was so crazy and fluky and would never happen again, and I think that's what will have to happen to the Cubs. You have to get to the point where your fans are so beaten down...
Yeah.
And so unconfident and just so hating everything.
Yeah.
And that's when it happens.
Yeah. I think they've been like that for about 90 years.
Right.
Maybe.
No, but I'm saying like with a specific I think the problem with last year was that the hopes, you know, they can say all they want about, oh, yeah, we're never going to win. All the Cubs fans thought something good was going to happen
last year. I honestly thought it. I was telling you about this earlier. I I bought the Major League Baseball thing on my laptop, the internet thing. I was like carrying it around with me, trying to watch every game. I was so like invested in that season, and I was doing a show because like it's bad for baseball and it's bad for times like right now, like you know college basketball, like March Madness. It stinks doing the show because you're working all day Saturday, so you find out about stuff. And I read about it on the ESPN on my BlackBerry. And I thought it was like someone, I was like, there's no way you can have that many errors in a, like, that can't happen. And then my dad called me. Yeah, I honestly thought it was a typo.
Yeah.
I go, there must have, and then my dad called me and was like, can you believe this? I was like, what?
Mm.
No. And so, but I'm, you know, I'm excited about, you know, the new season and we'll see how it goes.
Did you watch the World Baseball Classic?
Peripherally, I kind of watched it. If it was on ESPN, I kind of, Matt Stone and I kind of watch ESPN the same way. It's always on the television. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Like if it comes on, you know what I
Whatever
mean?
Whatever it
kinda
is.
Like, so. I'll be kind of like watching it going, oh, what the hell? Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I turned against Team USA and I didn't really like it, but I did watch the last game because Dice, SK, our ace, he pitched for Japan against Team USA.
Yeah.
And I found myself rooting for him because I wanted him to look good for the season. Like, yeah, screw America.
What did you what did you think of the Dominican Republic, that whole thing?
Like, that was pretty weird.
That was crazy, right?
Yeah. I think it was a bad sign when A-Rod's steroid scandal kind of kicked things off for the Dominicans.
Yeah, that thing was so crazy, man. That whole week was insane. Like the T.O. thing, the A-Rod thing, and then Manny, like that whole week, I remember, like, everybody was talking about, even in the SNL writers' room, people were like, what do you think about the A-Rod thing? And I was like, I don't know. My image of A-Rod really is from I always think of when you guys played them in the World Series, that thing.
Yeah.
That's what I think
the
of.
The slap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I think of. I can't get that out of my head when I watch that guy because it just brings out a
Are you going to parody him on Saturday Night Live?
I don't know if I'll be the right guy. They'll probably have
No, not you. Somebody will do it though.
Yeah, I think so.
It's time.
I wanted to do something about T.O., his Bills press conference with everybody talking about how excited they are, but their nose start getting like really big. Their nose keep growing like Pinocchio. But then I pitched it to a couple of people and they go, they did that in Airplane. And I go, they did do that in Airplane.
Oh yeah, that's right. They
and
did
go, and I go, Airplane. Oh man, that's where I got it from actually. Yeah. You think about ideas and you go, oh yeah, they did that in Airplane.
It's like creative osmosis. That
yeah, totally.
So when does Adventureland come out?
April 3rd.
Theaters everywhere.
Theaters everywhere.
And how many SNL episodes do you have left?
We have four. We got Seth Rogen and Zac Efron. And then we have 3 weeks off. And then we come back. Last two of the season, they're heavy hitters. It's Justin Timberlake and Will Ferrell.
Wow.
Those are going to be – all four of those shows I think are going to be great.
Timberlake's on the Mount Rushmore of hosts at this point, right?
Yeah, he's in
– current guys?
Yeah, he's in that, like, Tom Hanks.
Can
like,
do anything, fun to work with, all that stuff.
Yeah, that guy's just – he's – got chops, man, to spare.
Timberlake, Tom Hanks. Obviously, well, I can't count Will Ferrell because he was.
Yeah.
You're a cast member, you don't count.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, I guess you can't count if you're a cast.
It's too big
member.
Of an advantage.
But like, if he's in that, like Baldwin's another guy comes back and they elevate everything. Like Timberlake, yeah, that guy is just amazing. You write him something and he just destroys it.
I'm always fascinated by the host because I do think it's like a litmus test of. Kind of how good of an actor you are in a weird way.
Yeah.
You can do a whole bunch of different things.
Yeah.
It says something. I'm not sure what.
Yeah.
But like for, you know, I remember Gwyneth Paltrow hosted once. She was awesome.
Yeah.
And she was doing characters and it's like, wow, is she like more talented than, and I think the same thing with Affleck. Like Affleck's great when he hosts.
Yeah.
It's like, am I underrating him?
Yeah. Like, in your head, you kind of have that thing where you kind of go, because that show is all that thing is a showcase. It's a showcase for us every week, you know? That's the thing. Like, people, are you going to, you know, leave SNL or what? You know, like, people, I remember after Superbad came out, like, a lot of people, are you? And I was like, no. It's like, it's a dream to be on that show. But B, you get to be funny on television every week in a different way, you know?
And then C, it's only September to May.
Yeah. so you can do other
whole
stuff.
Summer, and you get weeks off and stuff. Yeah. Well, keep doing what you're doing.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks for coming over. Maybe,
this
it.
Is awesome to
you had
be
a good
here.
Time.
Man.
I knew you would.
This is great, man. Thank you.
All right, we'll be back in the BS Report tomorrow with another Hollywood guest. Stay tuned.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNradio.com.
Peace out.
And that concludes another episode of the BS Report. And here's 55 more words that Bill Simmons intended to mention, but unfortunately ran out of time. Now you can get any regular pile-high Subway footlong for just $5. The keyword is any. The sweet onion chicken teriyaki, savory chicken and bacon ranch, the meaty taste bud pleasing Italian BMT. All the regular famous Subway footlongs, just $5. Subway, eat fresh. See store for details.